I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
For decades, he's been the king of Memphis.
It's good to be king of your own little town.
You want to see the king? You think anybody would pay to come down and see a sawed-off, runt, bug-eyed Bill Dundee? No, they come to see me, baby.
King of them all, right here it is, baby. The greatest wrestler that ever lived and ever will step into a ring. You're looking at him, and I am the champion.
And you may be familiar with his work in WWE, too.
I'll show you who the real king of the World Wrestling Federation is.
It's the most electrifying move. It's Fox Entertainment today. Oh, the people devil! It's Mr. McMahon all right. It's Mr. McMahon all right. It's Mr. McMahon all right. Look, look, look. He's trying to bite him.
For 50 years, he's been known all over the world as one of wrestling's biggest stars. And now, he's decided to share all of his favorite stories from his 50 years in wrestling with you.
Tell me a story.
Why don't you put your false teeth in backward and eat yourself to death?
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
This is the Jerry Lawler Show.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Jerry Lawler Show. My name is Sean Reedy. Thank you so much for joining us, because we have a great one today. Not just one Memphis legend on the line with us, but we have two who have careers going back together, intertwining 45 years. Jerry the King Lawler and Tommy Rich, two legends. Such a pleasure to be with you. How are you guys doing today?
Well, I don't know about Tommy, but I'm doing great. How are you, Tommy?
I'm doing wonderful, man. It's good to be on here, man. I've been going crazy just sitting home. Not a whole lot of things to do, so I allowed us to keep on talking, so y'all might have to tell me to shut up. I've been locked up for a while.
That'll be no problem, no problem. I think we're all in that same. I think we're all in that same boat. This quarantining is getting
Yes, I tell you what, it's something. I mean,
Well, before we get into talking about the past, let's talk a little bit about the more recent past. We talked a little bit before this. You and your wife actually had the virus. Is that true?
Yes, she was down in Myrtle Beach, and my wife got up one morning. She said, "We're gonna have to go home." She said, "I'm sick." So we come home, and she had it. Then I had it, and then my grandson, he caught it, and I caught it again. It took us about a month to get over it all, and we all got our clean bill of health. We're ready to roll.
Wow, that's amazing. So you, that's one of the things they've been asking people. So you think you had it once and got over it and then caught it again?
Yeah, because, I mean, I went to the doctor, and I was good. And then my grandson, thank goodness for him, I mean, me and my wife, he lives with us, and anyway, he took care of us. I mean, because it's a pretty sick thing. My wife was really sicker than I was. I had about 4 or 5 days, and she was just, she was tired, just staying in the bed a lot, you know. So, and it's different. My symptoms were different from hers, you know. And then my grandson, he got it taken care of us. Because I went and tested again, and they said I was positive, so I could not. And I hadn't been nowhere, so I had to call it from him. You know, he had to call it from us. But now we all doing good, thank you.
Well, that's great.
Now, I'm 99% sure I had it, and I just had a miserable cough for like 3 weeks. What did you have?
I was going out both ends there at first. Had headache, you know. Just us stomach messed up, and the other end too. So it was like my grandson, he just lost his smell and his taste, you know. So, I mean, I don't know how you can figure it out, because everybody's symptoms different, it seems to be.
I think, Tommy, you know this guy too, and Sean, you've talked to him too, my good friend Eddie Austin on Twitter. He's like the number one King fan. And I just was talking to him last week, and both he and his wife tested positive and he's been really, really sick. He's just been had 104 temperature or 103 temperature and just and all of that sort of stuff. Hard to breathe. But he's
and we didn't even have a fever. I mean that's what's weird.
Yeah. It affects everybody differently. Well, I can say that Lauren and I have been really, really fortunate. And you know what? It's the reason you say it's so crazy. Like you said, you don't know where you got it. Our friend Eddie Austin says he was being very careful. He and his wife, they wore their mask everywhere. They stayed in most of the time. And he said he can't even imagine why he got it or where he got it, but he did. But Lauren and I have been, I mean, we've traveled all over the place to Florida. We're in Florida now. We've been out. We went to Dollywood with literally thousands of people up there that were not wearing masks or anything like that. And, you know, we've been fortunate so far. We haven't had any problems at all.
We really, when we was in Myrtle Beach, we wasn't really around nobody either because everything was still shut down pretty much. So we wasn't really around nobody either. But we come down with it. I guess you just don't ever know.
No, you don't ever know. Well, I was telling Sean this is one of those crazy things that it's got the whole country shut down and you know, nobody really knows. It's just a mystery as to what causes it or how you're going to get it or if you're going to get it. And it may turn out to be one of those things where before it's over, everybody may get it, you know,
I know that's the way it's headed.
Fortunately, most people, you know, the survival rate is a lot higher than they originally thought it was. I mean, everybody was thinking for a long time that if you get it, it's like a death sentence, you know. But now we know that that's certainly not the case.
Yeah, I mean, I'm living proof. If you get it, you don't necessarily, you know, pass away. But, like I said, we're lucky. I mean, because there's a lot of families, and God bless everybody that's lost somebody, too. I mean, because there's a lot of folks out there that's really suffered, like you said, suffered bad. And we've lost quite a few, too. So God bless all those that we've lost and their families, too.
Well, you're right about that. All right, well, let's talk about something a little more positive. Let's talk about what we were talking about before. It's crazy. Tommy, you and I go back a long, long way. And speaking of that, one of the things that we've talked about recently is the fact that on September 26th, I talked with Burt Prentice, illustrious promoter Burt Prentice the other day, and he's finally got that date cleared, September 26th in Jackson, Tennessee at the Jackson Generals baseball stadium where it's going to be outside. It's going to be the big stadium, seats almost 8,000 people. He's going to have a 50th anniversary show for my career. I can't believe that I've been around in the business for 50 years. It's crazy.
It is hard to believe. Bert called me and was talking, and I didn't really, of course, I'm right there on your heels anyway, but you just don't think about it, you know, how fast that time flies. But 50 years, man. That's a blessing, man. And you're still out kicking it too, so that's really good.
Yeah, that's true. I'm still kicking, not quite as high, but I'm still kicking.
I heard that. Me either.
Well, when you know what, I've told this story before, but what year did you start? I know I can remember me and Jerry Jarrett taking you going up to a barn in Hendersonville there. Do you remember that?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's Lord. That was in, I graduated in 74, so that was like toward the end of 75. Like, yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, you're right. You're right there on my heels. You were only five years later, huh?
Yeah, right there. Shoot. It's just hard to believe. You remember that time that, first time I was really, after that I was around, remember we went deep sea fishing, Sam Bass and Jerry and Tojo and all us? You remember that?
Oh my gosh. I think everybody, I didn't get sick and throw up, but I think everybody else did on that trip. Poor Sam Bass.
Yeah, I had lots of sickness pills, and I was still sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Sam Bass got on the back. Sam Bass on his hands and knees. I'll never forget them waves breaking up over that boat. It was so rough out there. And Sam down on his hands and knees crawling to the back of that boat throwing up.
Oh, it was, yeah, it was awful.
I tell you what.
I think that was Jerry Jarrett's idea. And everybody, you know, Jerry, he was the boss then, so everybody went along with what he said. And like you said, it was you, me, Sam Bass, Jerry Jarrett, Tojo Yamamoto, and Fargo was there too, right?
That was Eddie Marlin, wasn't it?
Oh, Eddie Marlin. That's right. You're right. Eddie Marlin.
Yeah, it was
and
Eddie
I remember, so for some reason, but you know, he didn't tell us, or it was a last minute change of plans. We went out so far on this boat. It wasn't all that big a boat, but of course you could sleep. It had little bunks underneath. But for some reason, we decided to spend the night out there. And in the middle of the night, this huge storm came up. And, man, like you said, it was throwing that boat. I mean, that boat was the waves were so big, it was actually throwing us up out of the water at one point. It was so crazy. And I remember the bilge pump, you know, the water started coming into the boat and this bilge pump started making noise and coming on. And we were, I thought we were really going to die. And Sam Bass was like you said, crawling around so sick. And the captain started climbing up to go outside, to go up into the, I don't know wherever he drove the boat from, was like up on this high part of the thing. And he started climbing up there. While the storm was going, and Sam leaned over to me and said, "Well, I guarantee you that's the last time we'll see that guy." And so, sure enough, the next day when the storm kind of subsided, that guy got thrown around. He had a big cut on his head where he had got thrown.
Big black eye, he was beat up.
That was some trip.
That is quite the crew you had together for that one.
Yeah, that was a Gilligan Island crew right there.
You're not kidding. I'll never forget. Tojo caught a fish that looked just like him. he caught one of those little puffer fish.
Well,
it wasn't little. It was kind of big. And everybody started laughing because his fish would blow itself up, and it looked just like Tojo's little fat face.
Lord.
Well, we made a lot of trips. If you remember, when we drove down there, some of us were in the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We definitely old school. That's right. Yeah. had the matches back there or something. Yeah. y'all bought all that doggone food and stuff and all that beer and what none of it drank away.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we put mattresses in the back of a pickup truck. I don't know. I think Eddie Martin was driving. Me and Jerry Jarrett were in the back of a truck just laying down. Oh, my gosh, it was crazy. Lauren just sitting over here. Lauren just said, bunch of rednecks. You're right.
Now, Tommy, I remember we had you on the Jerry Jarrett show, and the story, as it was told, was that you were just desperately wanting to get into pro wrestling, and didn't you have to do some yard work for him first to, like, prove how much you wanted it and things like that?
I mean, he paid me. I didn't just go over and do it for nothing. He paid me. I worked on his farm. He had me one day, and, you know, they got a ditch which you dig a ditch with anyway, but anyway, like, from his barn to up to the pump, probably good 60, 70 yards. Anyway, he wanted me to dig that doggone hose up out of the ground, and it was about 12 to 18 inches deep, so, and that old ground was hard as a rock. And anyway, I got about 6 foot up, and I thought, I'm just going to have to quit. I can't do this. And I started grabbing it and yanking it up. I was pulling it up out of the ground. And he come out there and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm getting this up like you told me to do." But he wanted me to dig it all up, I think.
I do remember Jerry Jarrett had bought us, what was that? Was that right there? But that was a different place than where his big house was, wasn't it?
it was out off of Shackle Island, out that way back toward, it wasn't his place up there. It was the other place he had I think Jimmy can't work for him over there and ruined his horses or something. I think, that's when I started working for him after he let Jimmy Kent go. All the horses, he done ruined the horses or something. We had to ride them. I was scared to death.
Yeah, that was another thing that this is already bringing back in my memory. One of them, what was his name? The horse was named Third Q, I think. It threw Jerry Jones, and he broke his arm, right?
Yeah, sure it is. That was a big old stud horse. Yeah, up on it, throwed him off. That was a big horse, too, yeah. That Jimmy Kent had run him well. I don't know what he did to him because I ain't no horseman.
But anyway,
I remember I was having to ride him, run him up and down the hill, and then one day one of them took off with me. My feet fell out of the stirrups, and I was holding on to the horn. He rode right at the fence, man. I thought, oh, God, this is it. But anyway, he stopped, and everything was good.
Well, anyway, from breaking the horses, you went to breaking your back in the little farm down there. He had a little farmhouse or something and set a ring up inside there, right?
Yeah, we worked out a little bit. Shoot, he had me for about the first 3 months. He'd say, come over to my house. That's when he lived over on the lake. Then he was living on the lake.
Yeah.
And he'd tell me, he'd say, come on over and we'll work out some today. Every time I'd get over there, they'd have to leave to go on a wrestling trip. I guess he thought I'd quit coming, I reckon. But I kept coming, and then finally we started working out. You know, one thing led to another, and me and Tojo went to Birmingham first and worked with the Von Steigers, I think. Then I came to Memphis, and, of course, when I first came, I remember the first night, we were wrestling in Tupelo, Mississippi, and I was supposed to referee, and that's when, remember Jerry Bryant? You remember Jerry, right?
Sure, of course.
Well, Jerry was supposed to wrestle, and anyway, they didn't want to tell me I was going to wrestle. So we got there, and Jerry acted like he was hurt. So I wrestled Phil Dickerson. I remember that. And anyway, we had a decent match. And then the next night, we went to Jonesboro, Arkansas, and I wrestled Tank Patton. And he ain't been working about 6 months. And then people in Jonesboro, it was a bad match. I thought, Lord, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it or not. Then I started working with you a little bit. Lord, I looked like the Pied Piper. I was burnt. My ribs was hurt. My head was shaved.
Yeah, that was quite the initiation working with me. I just watched the video not long ago of the match where you and I, you're right, you had, I guess you, I don't know, something was wrong with your ribs. Maybe that was where I had burned you. But then we were wrestling.
I think that's where you burnt me is what it was.
Yeah, and then we were wrestling a match, and big old Plowboy Frazier wearing those big rings that I had given him in lieu of money, me and Sam Bass, and Plowboy jumps in the ring, and we started beating you up. You next thing you know, you're all bloody. And then do you remember Ron Mikulajczyk? You remember him?
Ron Mikulajczyk, football player, yes, sir.
This guy, he couldn't wrestle a lick, but he was big and strong, and he was just trying to get in the business. And he came in to your rescue, and I'll never forget, he just got down on like a 3-point stance, and he ran into Plowboy Frazier and knocked him clear across the ring.
Plowboy, that was his thing at 3-point stance,
Plowboy came to me and he said, oh, Lord, neighbor, let's get out of here. And I said, no, we got to finish.
Oh, Plowboy.
And then poor Sam Bass was wearing one of those old polyester three leisure suits. And you guys started ripping his pants, and they were hard to rip. But that Ron Mikulajczyk was so strong, he was lifting Sam, throwing him all around the ring, trying to rip his pants off.
Rip the pants off. Yeah, that was the deal. Was supposed to rip his pants off.
Yeah, I'm looking it up online. I think, you know, Tommy's first real shot at the main event, February 16th, 76, you guys had a DQ, but then we came back the next week, 8,000 people there, and he beat you in a no disqualification match to win the Southern title. So I think that was, that's pretty big as establishing him as a legitimate big star in the territory, right?
'76, too, that was like shoot, I hadn't been working a year. I mean, I worked out some, but it was getting to work with guys like Jerry and, like I said, Phil Hickerson, them guys. I mean, Phil Hickerson, good doctor. But they all took an interest in me and helped too. I mean, you know, cause I didn't really know nothing and they took the time to show you the ropes and stuff. So I'm real appreciative of that. I mean, that was the first really big angle I ever worked with Jerry.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is the Jerry Lawler Show.
After you had that little singles run, then you teamed up with. I was trying to remember, I guess the Fabulous Ones, who they were red hot there for a while, Steve Kern and Stan Lane. Then I think they left the territory or something. And whose idea was it to put you and Eddie Gilbert together?
That was Jerry Jarrett. I enjoyed being with Jackie. I love Jackie Fargo, but that was, that was Steve and Stan's thing. I mean, that was a. I don't know. It shouldn't have been done, I don't think. Steve Stan, they was the hottest thing. I mean, so I don't know if that was, come in and try to follow them with doing their gimmick. I don't know if that was the best. Yeah, we did do the Fab.
Well, you know what? Later on, I was reminded of that when I was up in the WWE and Diesel and, Scott Hall
or Razor Ramon.
Razor Ramon, they left the territory, and so the next thing you know, we had a fake Diesel and a fake Razor Ramon. You remember that?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to place them back.
Yes, exactly. Very hard. The fans, go ahead.
The new Fabs were better than the fake Diesel and Razor, I got to say.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
well, thank you.
Because you guys had some great matches with the PYTs and with Phil Hickerson and the Spoiler. I think if you had been given maybe just a different name, it would have been a completely different story.
Oh, yeah.
You did some great stuff.
Definitely. I mean, the matches was great, but I mean, you just can't, we should just been brought in as hot stuff Eddie Gilbert and Tommy Wildfire Rich, I think it would have meant more than us doing the Fab thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that was Jerry Jarrett's idea, not mine, because it was.
Well, I think it was, Biden.
The split was very memorable, though. The brawl on TV that you guys had where you were both just bleeding all over the place, just having a crazy brawl with poor Lance stuck in the middle. I know that's one that people still love going back and watching on YouTube.
Yeah, that was a mess that day. I mean, that was good. Yeah, but we had some good matches. Me and Eddie did, we had some good matches. I mean, but I look back, man, and, I mean, a lot of that stuff's pretty memorable. I mean, the stuff that it did with Jerry, I mean, hiding under the ring, just all the different things we did. I mean, the tag matches with Austin Idol and myself against Jerry. Of course, Bam Bam Bigelow. I mean, that stuff, I mean, it was all, I mean, it was hot, but them were good angles, too.
Yeah, that was when Memphis was really red hot. It was crazy. But the time when we put and you're talking about you hiding under the ring, that was my match with Austin Idol, and that was a hair versus hair match. And even remember who the manager was? Paul Heyman was there at the time.
Yeah, sure was.
I think we talked.
It wasn't hair versus hair. It was your hair against. Austin was going to give all the people their money back, wasn't he?
Oh, exactly right. Exactly right. You're right. Yeah, that was the first time we'd ever come up with that crazy stipulation. The people.
So the people knew they was going to get something one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, it was going to be a big night. And then, of course, how long did you hide under the ring did you get there before the matches started?
I got there for security and everybody. They pushed me out on the TV cart, and I crawled up under the ring. I had an air mattress and a six-pack of beer. I was off the race. Anyway, I blow that air mattress up. Because I went to Japan and come back. I had jet lag. So I'd drink a beer and go to sleep. Wake up, pee in a can, drink another beer and go back to sleep. I was under there for a long time. It was a long time before we got out of the ring after, when I come out from under the ring and we did the deal to you. Remember, we couldn't get out of the ring. I mean, they had called extra police and everything.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'll bet you were under there a minimum of 3 hours.
Oh, no. I was under there probably closer to 6 or 7. Because I got there about 4 o'clock.
Oh, my gosh.
I was under there a long time.
Now, today, in the WWE, they'll just shut the lights off and have a bunch of people walk down to the ring and somebody will slide under the ring right before the reveal happens. But you were under there for 6 or 7 hours. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Y'all knew little Mikey do anything y'all told. Look. Y'all were going out there and hide. Oh, but it was fun.
Oh, yeah. That was a big night. That was a crazy night. Like you said, once you guys cut my hair and everything, they couldn't leave. The fans were so crazy there. Who was the barber? Was a friend of mine, Ted Cortese. He was scared to death.
Yeah. Oh, remember the razor wouldn't work. We had to get it. Oh, it was something. Remember that boy tried to crawl over the top. He climbed to the top.
Oh, yeah.
He got him back down, and police beat the daylights out of him. Probably wishing he got in there with us.
Yeah,
because he got the daylights beat out of him.
Oh, man, what a night. What a night.
Was that one of the craziest crowds you can remember?
That's the most heat I've been around.
Austin,
I was standing at the gate. They had police line side by side where it's like a little tunnel. All of a sudden, Austin hollered, run, just left me standing there. He done run to the back. I still out of the cage. Hell, man, for themselves, I reckon.
Oh, my gosh. Speaking of that kind of situation, remember how it was up in Louisville, Kentucky, when the police up there were awesome, man? Of course, this was back in the days, like you said, in the early 70s. Nobody even thought about suing anybody for anything. But, man, the fans would go so crazy up in Louisville. And the police would just snatch him up if a fan hit one of the wrestlers or whatever. The police would just snatch him and bring him back to the back and just throw the fan in that back room with the wrestlers.
I remember that. Yeah.
And you just beat the crap out of the fans. And then after that, then the police would say, "All right, now you want to just go out this back door and go home, or you want to go to jail?" They'd say, "Oh, I'll just go home. Thank you, sir. Thank you."
Sure did. I do remember that. Yeah. Boy, I ain't thought about none of that stuff in a long time, but they sure did, didn't they?
Oh, they sure did. It was some crazy times back then. Now, you also, you teamed with Doug Gilbert a lot. You and Doug are still really good buddies, aren't you?
Yeah, oh yeah, me and Doug is huge. I've been with Dougie since he was a little kid, too. Shoot, he used to go with me and Eddie on trips. And heck, he wasn't even about 13 to 14, man. Yeah, he's just like a brother to me. The Gilberts, yeah, I've always been around them. Of course, Eddie and Tommy teamed up. I'd always go with Eddie, and Tommy was always there, too. So, the Gilbert family's very, very good people, yeah.
Yeah, you guys were really
good. Matter of fact, I talked to Dougie just a little bit ago before I called and I said, "Hey, anything special you want me to say about you?" He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, I'm going to be on Jerry's show." And he said, "Just tell him we're going to wear freaking Robert A. There in Jackson on the 26th, right?"
Yes. Yep.
September 26th. We're going to see what's a rock and roll guy.
Yeah, that's good. That's going to be great. That's going to be a big night. We hadn't even mentioned the fact that that's one of the matches that Bert Prentice has already set that night. He's going to bring back so many of the Memphis legends for that show. It's going to be awesome. And he's got you and Doug Gilbert teaming against Ricky and Robert, the Rock and Roll Express. What a match that'll be.
Yeah, shoot, that's an experience in that ring. I'm excited about it, too. Shoot, I'm excited to get out of this house. What am I talking about, so? You know, son, just getting to come to Jackson. Hey, and being your 50th year, man, in the business, man, it's going to be a shindig. I'm telling you, Jackson, and anybody else that can hear it. September 26th, you better get a ticket.
Yeah, that should.
There's going to be some home runs and all.
That should be good. You're right. Well, listen, Tommy, how long was it then when what led to the fact that when you left when you left the Tennessee territory, oh my gosh, next thing you know, you were the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Weren't you the youngest champion ever at the time?
Yeah, at the time, the youngest. I don't know, just time for me to go or something. I talked to Jared. So he got me booked down in Georgia. And of course, the first night I went, I had me a new long red and white velvet robe made. We was wrestling at the Atlanta City Auditorium. I had my mom and little brother came with me, and a friend of my mom's. They come down, and so anyway, I get to the matches, and it's all good. Shoot, I saw Abdul the Butcher. That's who I had to wrestle.
Oh no! Who bled the most that night? You or him?
Old Anderson comes to me. He said, "Yeah, he's gonna beat you in about 30 seconds. We want you to bleed." Blah 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 blah. Jerry told me, he said, "If you get there and don't like it," he said, "just call me and I'll get you out of it gracefully." So, I come back after that match and I thought, yeah, maybe I need to call Jerry now. But anyway, I stuck it out and, and everybody was like you. I mean, and the other guys taught me. I listened. You know, I didn't know nothing. I had to listen anyway. But thanks to guys like you and Harley Race and, shoot, just all them, all the guys like that, man, that helped me so much. Youngest world heavyweight champion. I mean,
who did you beat, and how did that match go? Were you expecting that, or what? How did that come about?
It was Harley's idea. It was Harley's idea to do it, and we did it in Augusta, Georgia. But I knew I was winning. A lot of people, I don't know what to think, but yeah, we knew what we was doing.
Yeah.
Why do you think you caught fire so much in Georgia? I mean, you can make an argument that you were the most popular wrestler in the country at one point with the TBS national exposure and everything.
I just think because back then everybody was characters. I mean, like Eddie King, Lawler, you had Ox Baker. That was everybody. You know, I think today, I think we take and put characters on people. You know, and back then, I think everybody was their own character, like Aaron Pondashky. You know, you had Blackjack Mulligan. I mean, great big cowboy guy. And I just think everybody being their own characters and stuff. And me coming to, from Tennessee to Atlanta, they hadn't had no, cornbread for it, which I went. And I was just old corn. And plus all them guys was you know, 250, 240, 250, 260, and I, here I was, 210 pounds soaking wet, and, you know, just very humble, yeah, and I just think it was something they'd never seen, and after the deal, you know, with Abdullah, me and Tony Atlas teamed up, you know, and we won the Georgia Tag Titles, first Salt and Pepper team, so me and him being together, you know, that was back at the time when all that stuff, you know, folks still had opinions about it. But, you know, Tony and me was just like brothers, you know. So we got over real good. And I think when he left and I started doing singles, and they just used me pretty good there, too, because, like, I'd worked in singles for a while, and then only put me with somebody to do tag, like Wahoo would come in. Shoot, it just, you know, and like after Tony and me, and Abdullah Butcher, and then that night at the Atlanta City Auditorium, Abdullah said, he told me, he said, hey, kid, I'll give it back to you one day. And I thought, yeah, right. So anyway, we was at the Omni on the Thanksgiving night, and Wahoo and Ole always got buses. Well, Wahoo was in the main event with Abdullah, and him and Ole got in the bus, and Wahoo walked out. They didn't have nobody for Abdullah to wrestle. And I mean, they were hanging from the rafters. He said, and they asked Abby, he said, who do you want to wrestle? And they all called me the kid. He said, give me the kid. And Ole said, who? The kid. So anyway, Ole said, he said, Tommy. Said, anyway, I worked with Abby in the main event, and he told me, he said, I told you I was going to, and he remembered that, and this was probably a year or so later. He said, I told you I was going to give it back to you. Tonight's your night. And like in Atlanta, you wasn't supposed to go on the floor at all.
Oh, Lord.
And of course, with Abby, hell, we went on the floor. We went up through the stands, and then people were just going crazy. We get back in the ring, and I'm hitting him like, and this time I might have been 220, and Abby was a good 450 pounds, whatever. Yeah. He was big.
Yeah.
And I'm hitting him. He said, slam me, kid, slam me.
Oh, my God. Him.
And I'm thinking this is one of them deals where, you know how you go to pick the heel goes to pick you up and can't get you up.
Yeah, well,
he's going to sit down on me, which he wouldn't have had to anyway. But, so anyway, I hit him again. I said, slam me, damn it. I said, okay. And I reached down and grabbed him. And of course, he went up like a bag of feathers or something. And I slammed him. That whole ring about broke down in the middle. And then people went, woo, like that. And, of course, after that, I was off to the races, too. I mean, he said he'd give it back, and I had to say Abdullah give it back.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, like you said, you know, you were the young, underweight. You were just a classic underdog. I mean, that's why everybody got behind you so much, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, shoot, just very lucky.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Jerry Lawler Show. This was part one of a two-part conversation with former NWA heavyweight champion and pro wrestling legend Tommy Wildfire Rich. Monday will be part two. Sean and Jerry will be back to talk with the legendary Tommy Rich. In the meantime, make sure that you're following the King at Jerry Lawler on Twitter and Sean at SeanReedy16. Enjoy your weekend and be ready for part two on Monday.